Especially soon, Johnny. You're the last team to arrive. I'm sorry to tell you, you have been eliminated from the race.
There's Phil Kogan breaking the hearts of two more Americans who just wanted to go around the world and win $1 million. Oh, it's the ninth time around doing that for Phil. Season number 9 of The Amazing Race, which has moved to 9 o'clock on Tuesday nights here in the Midwest. And Phil joins us from somewhere in the world. He's actually on a break, having finished season number 9 and probably waiting to get going with season number 10. Hi, Phil. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you.
Welcome back to the show, as always.
Thank you for having me back again.
It's always a pleasure. So after the family edition, were you glad to leave the continent?
Well, I have to tell you that I really do prefer the race with more places, and I do prefer heading overseas. I just think it makes for a more exciting race.
And tonight is the first time you're headed to Russia, if I'm correct.
Actually, we went to Russia in season 5.
Oh.
And, so this is our second time back in Russia, and we were in St. Petersburg last time. I don't know if you remember when they had to eat all that caviar.
Oh, yes.
Yes. So this is a return to Russia, but this time to Moscow.
When you were here in the studio last year, you and I talked about various places we both had been, and I told you that I had been to Moscow in the late 80s while it was still behind the Iron Curtain. It was the days of Perestroika and Glasnost, but it was still the Soviet Union. Now that you've been back there in the last few months, what's it like?
It's quite extraordinary, actually. Every time I go back, there's this major, major change. And what's weird is you see the Russian architecture still there, that we all have seen in postcards and we've seen on the news. But on top of that is this these franchises that are appearing over the top of it. And, so you'll see Russian advertisements for Coke and McDonald's and then some of the newer brands that are because they've been there for a while, some of those. But you see some of these newer brands layered on top of that. I found the food to be absolutely extraordinary. We had some really good meals. The prices on the food was very, very cheap. But I went into an Olympic store, a Russian Olympic store, where they sold Russian apparel for their U.S. Olympic team, and a sweatshirt was the equivalent of $300.
Wow.
For one of these sweatshirts. I thought, well, this would be a nice little thing to take back, with all the Russian stuff on it. And in the end, I had to put it back. It was just way too expensive.
Yeah. So you can imagine what it would be like for your average Russian who probably doesn't even make $300 in a month.
Well, I can assure you that your average Russian is not going to buy any of these sweatshirts, that's for sure.
Yeah. When I was there, I found the most daunting thing was the signs, because I don't speak Russian and I don't know the Cyrillic alphabet. Was that a problem for the teams?
Absolutely. I mean, every time they get anywhere where they don't know the language or they're out of their element with the culture, it gets very, very frustrating for them. Of course, it gives us great TV, so that's why we put them in there in the first place.
How do you do when it comes to that? You've traveled so many times around the world and gone to so many different places. Are you comfortable there?
Yeah, I'm comfortable anywhere, new and different. I like that, and of course, we are traveling with interpreters and people that are bilingual in whatever place that we're in. So that obviously helps. But I like immersing myself in that. I'm challenged by that, and of course there are miscommunications that take place just because you're from different cultures and you're in new environment. But I love that. I thrive on that.
I have a couple of questions from listeners who emailed me knowing that you'd be on the show today. A listener named Jim said he was watching one of the first two episodes, and one of the teams showed up really late at night, and they said to you, Phil, aren't you supposed to be asleep? And you've told me before that there are problems sometimes where, because you have to be there for the first team and the last team, and quite a bit of time can go on between the two, that you have to play a lot of catch-up. Was that the case in this ninth season?
Absolutely. In fact, I would say that the first four episodes were as challenging to shoot as the first episodes in season 3, which was the toughest season that I've ever been involved with, just from our point of view. People forget that we shoot the entire season in 28 days, and that's an average of 2-point-something days per show, and I go everywhere they go. So this season, we actually had situations where I couldn't get ahead of the teams to go to all the locations first, so I had to go to the pit stop, finish with all my work at the pit stop, then backtrack to the detours and the roadblocks to shoot those before heading out on the next leg. So it was extremely stressful, actually, for about the first five episodes.
A listener by the name of Norman wants to say, is it my imagination or is Phil losing his New Zealand accent? He sounds different on the CBS shows now than he does on the reruns on the game show network.
I think there's no doubt that my American voice or my American accent has actually increased. It's not an intentional thing that I have done. From the beginning, I was asked to neutralize my New Zealand accent. As I'm talking to you right now, it's just as it's coming out. But I was told in the beginning to neutralize the New Zealand accent. And now, ironically, as my accent becomes more American, they seem to care less and less about any New Zealand coming through in my accent. I don't know. People seem to like the fact that it is a foreign-sounding accent.
Norman also says the show often has too many bottlenecks where a team with a two-hour lead is rewarded simply, for instance, by getting to the airport 2 hours early, and then they end up on the same plane as the next several teams. Has there been any thought given to eliminating that problem?
Well, we don't see it as a problem, actually. We see it more as a way to keep the race tight and to keep it competitive. I think if you just let the race spread out too much and there are not these places where the teams are neutralized, where the teams actually come back together at certain points or where there's operational hours, then you end up with something that's so spread out, there's just no, people could get lucky and get on things and you just spread the thing out so far that you don't really have anything exciting to watch. So that's just the nature of the race, and it's worked for us. It's kept the show competitive. So, no, I think you're always going to see that. And then don't forget, too, that there are just inherent neutralizers that happen because of flight availability. I mean, we can't always set it up that teams can have three or four options to fly out from one country to another. A lot of times there is only one option, or the operational hours are what they are, and that's just it.
I got to say, having watched all nine seasons of the show, this was the most beautiful opening I've ever seen when you started with that two-hour episode a couple of weeks ago there in Red Rocks Canyon. How long does it take you to shoot that? Because I know that everything else you're doing on the run, as you were describing, but the opening, you could take your time, can't you?
Yeah, that's you're very perceptive. That's the one time, that time, and then also at the end of the show are the one times when we can actually slow down and really shoot what we need to shoot to construct something that is big and very Jerry Bruckheimer-ish, gives people the scale and the scope, I guess, of where we are. Not that we don't give that to people all the time, but we have much more time to craft that opening.
Talking with Phil Kogan from The Amazing Race here on The Paul Harris Show on KMOX, do you get a chance to get to know the teams before you go and get a sense in your mind of which teams are going to automatically do well and which ones are going to be trouble?
Well, to answer the question, I do get to know them beforehand. Some seasons more than others. It depends on my commitments. It depends on my commitments with various projects leading up to the start. But I get to know them very, very quickly. But I can assure you this, I, after nine seasons, still have no more clue about who's going to do well at the start of the race than I ever have. I mean, it's just, I have no clue. I've never been able to really pick it, and I think it's the same for the audience, and that unpredictable element is what makes the show work.
My wife and I, when we watch the show, like many of your viewers, we're deciding, as if we were a team on The Amazing Race, which detour, what roadblock, what decision would we make, because we think that's such an important part of it. But I didn't realize until this season how much size matters. When you're a large person and you got to get into a cab in other countries, I mean, you know me, I'm 6'4 and a large guy. I would be uncomfortable in a lot of these things, wouldn't I?
You would. What's great about this show is that it has a lot of neutralizers in terms of the challenges. Sometimes it's good to be big and strong. Sometimes it's good to be small and wiggly and flexible. Sometimes it's good to be light or heavy. There are so many variables, and we just never know how it's all going to play out. But it is also incredible how important taxi rides, taxi drivers, etc., have played a role in The Amazing Race over the seasons. I mean, they continue to determine so many destinies for the races.
One last question before I let you go here. How do we get you guys off Tuesday nights at 9 o'clock and into a better, more family-friendly time slot? Like, I'm thinking in the Midwest here, Mondays at 7 would be good for you.
Yeah, I've heard all kinds of suggestions for time slots. Somebody's recommended a Sunday time slot, which would put it, you know, after, say, 60 minutes.
Oh, that'd be perfect.
Yeah, I wish I could, I wish I had more power. I wish I was a more powerful person in that regard, but I'm not.
but I know you must be happy to be away from American Idol.
Yes, that is a mammoth, mammoth show. And my I have to admit, my daughter is, you know, really into it. And so I end up watching it, you know, myself, just because it's on. Because, you know, I wouldn't watch it ordinarily, but she has it on. And, yeah, that is, what a phenomenon that is, you know.
Yep. Well, are you planning for season 10 yet?
We are. We're looking at season 10 shooting in the not-too-distant future. And then hopefully, you know, it'll keep going after that as well.
I hope so, too. It's always a pleasure having you on. And as always, I'll talk to you later in the season.
I hope so, and I hope to get back to your studio sometime.
Oh, I'd love to have you back here in St. Louis. If you and your dad want to make another cross-country trip, you're always welcome here.
Well, that's very kind of you.
Thanks very much, Phil.
Take care.
Phil Kogan from The Amazing Race. Tonight at 9 will be the third episode of this ninth season. If you have not gotten caught up in Amazing Race fever yet, check it out. Tuesday nights at 9 on Channel 4 here in St. Louis. Phil Kogan on The Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.